I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. What to do with an abandoned railroad line that is filled with weeds and trash, crumbling infrastructure, and graffiti? That's a question organizers and planners and activists in Philadelphia have been discussing and debating for about a decade now as they ponder the future of the Reading Viaduct. It looks like their hard work is finally paying off with money for the development of the first phase of the project into an elevated park. It's a spur currently owned by SEPTA that fans out for about a quarter to a half of a mile. Today we want to talk about the visions, the plans, and the proposed benefits of the Reading Viaduct. This note, while it draws some inspiration from the famous High Line in the Meatpacking District in New York City, it will be different. This is Philadelphia after all. Let me introduce our two guests. Leah Murphy is Senior Associate with Interface Studio. That's a Philadelphia-based collaborative urban design and planning consulting firm. She's also President of Friends of the Rail Park. And Leah Murphy, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks so much, Marty.
You're welcome. Also with us is Nathaniel Popkin. He's Editorial and Research Director at Hidden City, co-editor of Hidden City Daily. And Nathaniel Popkin, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thanks, Marty.
You know, I've gotten a real education the last couple of minutes talking to the two of you off mic. But let me start with you, Leah Murphy. Take us to this spur that we're talking about today. What does it look like and where exactly is it?
It may be most helpful just to describe it in the context of the bigger vision. So we're advocating for a continuous and connective 3-mile-long corridor that would become a linear park and recreation path along the former City Branch and the 9th Street branches of the Philadelphia and Reading Railroad. The spur, so it's really spanning several neighborhoods from Fairmount Park, you know, through the Fairmount neighborhood, the Art Museum area, Callow Hill, Chinatown North, to the West Poplar, Ludlow neighborhoods, to the threshold of Northern Liberties. So phase one is a really important segment that begins at Broad Street and goes east, curves down a little bit, and then ends at Callow Hill. So this particular part of what is actually the City Branch is in many ways already used as a park where, you know, people from the neighborhood have used it for, you know, as a dog park,
sure,
or, you know, place to just get some sun, in a part of Philadelphia that has zero open space to speak of currently. So phase one is really a streetscape improvement project from Broad to the bridge that goes over 13th Street. And then as it goes from 13th to 12th, it really becomes a viaduct structure, an elevated structure, passes over 12th Street as an elevated bridge. And you know, it starts to, once you start to ramp up to there, you start to get some of the views and some of the, you start to experience the city in a totally different way.
In fact, Nathaniel, you were talking about that, the idea of getting this elevated view of Center City and all the neighborhoods that fan out from there.
Yeah, we happen to be a somewhat low-slung city, and this the viaduct is in an old industrial neighborhood. One of the interesting things about deindustrialization is that most regular people never get up. You know, where they worked on the fifth or sixth floor of a factory, that doesn't exist anymore. And the best views as an elevated view in Philadelphia is on the L itself. So lacking all of that and lacking the capacity to see the city differently, the viaduct will offer us that possibility. It changes your perception of the city.
I remember taking the Reading Railroad and coming into Reading Terminal. And, I mean, it wasn't that long ago that it was a functioning railroad company.
It last saw passengers in the 1980s. The City Branch, which is the part that goes west under Broad Street and out towards the Art Museum, last saw freight traffic in the early 90s serving the Enquirer. And so it isn't that far from our imaginations as a working railroad. And it was part of a massive infrastructure of railroad that existed in Philadelphia and that was built mostly in the 19th century.
Is the idea, Leah, though, to hold on and to keep some of the infrastructure that has been part of this railroad bed?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the historic materiality of, you know, what's there and speaks to the industrial past is of great value to the experience and the possibilities. I think, you know, the public interpretation of history is a huge part of what we're advocating for. It's not just a park. It's really so much more than that.
And how do you imagine people then using, let's take the first portion of, or the first part of it. How do you imagine them using it?
Well, I think the first part of it, you know, and will serve primarily as a neighborhood park. As I mentioned, for a part of Philadelphia that doesn't really have anywhere else, you know, any other green in the area. So, you know, people going to have lunch, and, you know, it's an opportunity to have events programming, especially for us to continue to promote future phases of the project. You know, I think it could serve not only just the immediate neighborhoods, but also people will come to phase one to sit, you know, to find out more about the project and see how great it could be.
Well, it's interesting. The High Line is often referenced, but doing some of my homework, I saw that people were saying, no, we're not going to be the High Line. But it sounds like there might be an example in Paris that relates, and perhaps, Leah, I can go back to you.
Sure, yeah. There's the Promenade Plantée in Paris, which serves as a really useful precedent for us to point to. It's the same length. It's 3 miles long. And also, it has an elevated piece, but it also has a below-grade piece. So I'm not sure we mentioned that the city branch west of Broad is actually below street level, but mostly open to the sky. It also goes through a 3,000-foot-long tunnel underneath Pennsylvania Avenue. And having walked the length of the Plantée in Paris myself, you know, when you're in the submerged portions of the Plantée, you don't even know that you're below street level.
Wow.
So that's one of the things that we, you know, some of the feedback we get from communities is, you know, how are you going to make this underground space feel safe and a nice place to experience? And I think the Promenade Plantée is a really good example of that.
You're nodding your head vigorously, Nathaniel.
I am, because the elevated part actually went through parts of Paris that were somewhat derelict. So imagine in the 1980s and 90s, there were actually vacant parcels in the city of Paris. And it was a poor neighborhood. And so that project actually transformed it. And you can see it when you're walking along the promenade. You can see the way that developers reacted to it. They actually put stores into the base of the stone base of it. And they built mixed-use projects with open space next to it, all along it, really incorporating into the fabric of Paris in a place that people had given up on.
So you see some parallels there that this, because this has been abandoned for, what, 30 years now, right?
Absolutely.
And we have a third guest who's joining us, and I do want to get him in on the conversation, but a quick question back to you, Nathaniel. What's interesting to thinking of this history here and also the infrastructure, we've got tunnels, we've got bridges, we've got this sort of up and down railroad bed.
All of this is the vestiges of the 19th century when Philadelphians built the great railroads of America, and this city was built by the railroad, and it was everywhere. And what's interesting, the city branch goes west towards the Art Museum. That was the earliest, or one of the earliest, railroad lines in America, bringing coal from the fields of Pennsylvania to the port of Philadelphia. So it reaches back into our city's very history. The fact of putting it underground does as well, because that railroad was at grade, that meaning that trains were passing by your house, on your street corner,
hard
and that was a very difficult thing to deal with.
I would assume noisy and dirty and all the things that would come from trains at that time.
And deadly, Marty.
And deadly as well. Let me get another guest to join our conversation. Paul Levy has just snuck into our studio. He's a founding chief executive of the Center City District. It's a downtown management organization providing security and cleaning and a whole host of things. And Paul Levy, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thanks very much for inviting me.
So what is your vision for the Reading Viaduct?
Well, I think there's a shared vision that the community has, that a whole group of people have. I mean, this is a portion of the city that lacks parks and green space. Secondly, it's an area of the city which has seen great investment from the expanding Chinatown community. You've got arts and cultural groups, tech companies, and yet this remnant industrial artifact is a blighting influence that is really retarding development in the area. And so as this area improves, as this park improves in phases, I think we'll see Chinatown expand with their desire for more affordable housing. We'll see more artists, more creative economy tenants, more condominiums. I think this will leverage other development and expansion.
And when do you see, I guess, phase one beginning?
Well, yeah, I think, you know, this is obviously an ambitious project that's going to take multiple years, but phase one, where we work very closely with the Friends of the Rail Park and the people in the neighborhood in Chinatown, we have construction documents. We are in the process now of putting together the funding, and if all goes well, we could start construction within a year from now.
And how close to the final funding are you?
Well, we're maybe half. I mean, obviously the city needs to act. The state needs to act. There are allocations at the city and state level. Some of the local foundations have supported. There's still more money to raise. But I think there's extraordinary excitement about this project, both from the public side, from the private side. And so if all goes well, we can get the first phase, which is on SEPTA-owned property, going essentially from Callow Hill and then curving northwest to 13th and Noble and out to Broad Street right across from the school board.
And Lee, you've been involved in this idea for some time now. What do you think are the lessons, I guess, of organizing around a project as ambitious as this?
Well, you know, I've been involved since 2011, but this past fall, Friends of the Rail Park asked, you know, the Reading Viaduct Project to join the board, and we merged the two organizations. And they've been advocating for this for 15 years. You know, so
long
I
time.
Think, yeah. So I think it's the lesson there is to, you know, they're very passionate advocates, and they just didn't give up. You know, then you know they were talking about this as a concept before the High Line existed. So, you know, that's one of the most powerful lessons that I think we can take.
Yeah, I think that's what's more exciting. I mean, Sarah McEnany and John Struble, two artists who live in the area,
right,
work in the area, were thinking about this before the High Line. Most of us who are Johnny Come Lately's got inspired by the High Line. I think John and Sarah have probably taken 5,000-10,000 people on walking tours of that viaduct. So I think they have been the inspiration for this. And I think as a lot of people, along with the Friends of the Rail Park, see not only an opportunity for a park, but for a unique park that touches on the history that Nathaniel was talking about, it came so clearly in the design process. We don't want the High Line. We want something like that. We want something uniquely Philadelphia that plays upon this architectural history, and that's the exciting part of this.
We're almost up in a break here, but does it also tell us that it takes time to get things done in Philadelphia?
It takes time to get things done in every city. Philadelphia just has a little bit steeper hill to push the rock up, but the rocks go up the hill.
You're nodding, Nathaniel.
I'm nodding, and I think it's because most of the great things that have happened in this city in the last 15 to 20 years are based in the community. They're people who have come with visions and been persistent. Even major infrastructure projects like this or like the Schuylkill River Park, they're because people had a vision and they kept at it. It didn't come from the government.
We're talking about bottom-up
thinking, visioning, dreaming, hoping, and working hard.
Well, let's take that short break. We'll get back to our conversation. We are talking about the Reading Viaduct. It's a century-old abandoned railway line, and it looks like it's one step closer to becoming a reality, a park in the city of Philadelphia. Talking with Nathaniel Popkin, Leah Murphy, and Paul Levy. We're taking phone calls at 1-888-477-9499, and we want to hear from you. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. We want to hear about your ideas, your thoughts about the Reading Viaduct. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY Camp Hill Special School with day and residential options is a community committed to the care and education of children ages 4 through 21 with mild to severe intellectual disabilities. Camp Hill's curriculum includes music, art, drama, the sciences, life and social skills development, animal husbandry, and horticulture. Camp Hill Special School is hosting an open house at their Chester County campus on Wednesday, May 14th at 9 a.m. Details at camphillspecialschool.org.
I'm Robin Young. Next time on Here and Now, a Muslim tests the waters in Kentucky in a run for state Senate.
Just because a lot of Republicans in my district does not mean they dislike me because of my Muslim background. They might dislike me because I'm a Democrat.
Next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
supporting WHYY Mendelssohn Club of Philadelphia, presenting Anthracite Fields and Mendelssohn Club Chorus, conducted by Alan Harler. It's an opportunity to explore Pennsylvania coal mining lore through this immersive concert. Saturday and Sunday, April 26th and 27th at 4 p.m. and 7:30 p.m. at the Philadelphia Episcopal Cathedral, featuring the Bang on a Can All-Stars and composer Julia Wolfe. Tickets available online at M, as in Mendelssohn, C, chorus.org, mcchorus.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen, again talking about the proposed Reading Viaduct here in Philadelphia. Paul Levy, our guest, a founding chief executive of the Center City District, Nathaniel Popkin, editorial and research director at Hidden City, co-editor of Hidden City Daily, Leah Murphy, senior associate with Interface Studio, that's a Philadelphia-based collaborative urban design and planning consulting firm, also president of Friends of the Rail Park, and we want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Let me go back to you and just, you know, I realize the money, you don't have all the money in hand, but we're talking about $10
million.
$8.6 million. Okay, just a slight correction right there. But so we're talking about $8.6 million. Mm-hmm. How do you see that money being spent, and where do you think the sort of largest portion of that money goes to?
Well, the 8.6 is all for the capital construction cost, and that's what Center City District will be overseeing the construction of Phase One. So that's all hard costs, and you know, to right. actually implement Phase One. On top of that, there will be a maintenance cost, you know, annual maintenance budget that we are, you know, actively fundraising for at this point to maintain and, you know, operate.
So we're talking about places where people can walk and sit, ride their bicycle, mm-hmm. hang out.
And yeah. Studio Brian Haynes did an amazing job with urban engineers of creating some really powerful imagery to illustrate the potential of Phase One. And I know that's now, you know, visible on your website.
It is indeed.
It's visible on our website as well, and therailpark.org. But it's really great what they did. I mean, they are using materials that harmonize with the, you know, industrial character of the neighborhood. They're creating, you know, sitting areas and you know, some really nice planting areas. Some swings are a part of.
Nice.
Phase One. I don't know. Some people may know that there have been some gorilla swings installed on other portions of the viaduct. So, kind of playing with that theme a little bit.
You want to answer that, Paul?
Yeah. Well, I think this is a piece of the viaduct that partially is on earth fill and partially on structure. Now, those structures were designed to carry two locomotives and trains at the same time, so they are structurally sound, but they are rusted, they're leaking water, and so just in terms of your question, a huge part of this budget is going simply to restore the structural integrity, eliminate rust, eliminate lead-based paint, and waterproof those, so anybody who goes under them knows they're pretty seedy places mm-hmm. right now. So a significant part just is to make sure that the solid structure doesn't leak, all the contaminants are taken care of. But then, as Leah was saying, the icing on the cake, which is what everybody's going to enjoy, is landscape walkways and benches, and each of them positioned so you're looking over 12th Street, looking down 13th Street, looking across Callow Hill Street. So you get vistas of the city. And one of the most exciting things for anybody who's walked on the elevated portion is you're going at a diagonal from the city, so you get surprised by seeing the Ukrainian Cathedral, the Ben Franklin Bridge, views of the skyline. So it gives you a great view, but also we've put those benches in those activity centers right over the street so people driving underneath look up and say, oh, something exciting is going on up there.
And there are lots of bridges in this city.
There are, and actually at street level, they're grungy and dingy right now. I walk under them all the time, but in fact, they're very interesting looking and they're very beautiful. And so restoring them, it's not just a project that's going to be up above you. It's going to change the nature and the feel of that neighborhood.
And how much cleanup do you think there will be? And I'll look at you, Leah.
Well, you know, there's a certain amount of, you know, cleanup of the soil. So, like, the top level of soil will be removed and replaced with new soil. It'll be totally safe as far as remediation of any contaminants is concerned. So that's priority right. In addition to preserving the existing infrastructure.
One of the most exciting things, I mean, that urban engineers found in the study is that actually not only was it more expensive to demolish this and to remove it than it would be to renovate it, but the remediation cost of disposing of soil that's hidden underneath the ground was huge, whereas modern landscape technology allows you to cap and cover this. So there are costs in this to just remediate environmental issues, but it's actually going to be much less expensive to preserve and reuse this as a park than it would have ever been to tear the whole thing down. And then clearly the positive impact, not only in an amenity, but so many more people who want to live and work there will help the city grow.
Do you see this as part of Center City?
I see this as multiple people's neighborhoods. It is part of Chinatown. It is part of Center City. It is part of Callow Hill. It's part of Lower North Philadelphia. It is going to be a park for everyone.
Well, and we were talking before the show began, Nathaniel, about just how the sort of changing, I guess, inner core of Philadelphia.
Yeah, I think that Center City, in fact, has grown. So whatever we're calling it, and clearly this is various neighborhoods, and that's the exciting thing. It even extends up into what is Ludlow or West Poplar and very close to the Northern Liberties once you get through all the way up the 9th Street branch. But really, it's an expression of the way in which Center City or downtown has really grown in concept as a cosmopolitan place, as a living, vibrant, culturally alive urban place. And that's probably very much because of what Paul has done with the Center City District.
Do you see it as an eyesore? I mean, the way it is now. Do you, I mean, because, you know, you probably see some beauty in things that other people might not see.
I once wrote about a concept called living in ruins, and I suspect, well, we all live in, this is an old city, so we're all living in ruins. We're living in the ruins of someone else's city that was built a long time ago before us, and we inherit it, and we adapt it, right? In this case, there are real ruins all over Philadelphia, and some of them are in better shape than others. Mm-hmm. There is something beautiful and engaging about living in a city full of these kind of epic pieces of infrastructure. They're moving. They make us dream and think about what was and even what might be. So when you finish something and you fix it up, that question about what it might be is lost. The key, and I think what's being addressed here, is the way that what's going to happen with this, at least in phase one, is the way it makes us think about the way things were. And it transports us a little bit to that time.
I wonder, too, from your perspective, Paul Levy, then, do you see development and apartment buildings and retail and art galleries, and as this viaduct is developed, do you see that developing along with it?
Yeah, well, if you start from the fact that if you look at this area and you'll see a vibrant Chinatown to the south, you'll see Northern Liberties, and to the west you'll see Spring Garden and Fairmount. 30% of the land around this viaduct is empty and derelict land. There are probably 10 to 15 vacant buildings in the area. So I love ruins as well,
yeah.
And we're going to preserve a lot of the architectural heritage of this. But I think there's a huge opportunity here. Chinatown has major aspirations for more affordable housing. There is room for that. There is room for more art galleries and more warehouse structures in the area. There's room for condominiums. What's so great about this area is there's so much available space to do very different types of uses. And the spirit of this place is a mixed-use place.
The idea of multiple, you agree with that, Leah?
Oh, absolutely. And I'm glad you brought up the art galleries and that kind of creative culture, because I think when you look at the full 3-mile route, you get this amazing cross-section of arts and culture, both in, the august, really well-established institutions, some of the most celebrated and visited destinations in Philadelphia along the city branch, and the Art Museum, the Perlman Building, the Barnes, the Rodin, they're all within a stone's throw of the city branch. And then crossing Broad into Callow Hill, you have this really informal, kind of grittier creative culture there with art studios and galleries and artisanal manufacturing. And it's That kind of unifying effect that this project can have in bringing all of those things together and allowing people to experience them in a singular way is one of the things that we really like to emphasize, is one of the greatest possibilities of this project.
So multiple uses, diverse groups of people using all those possibilities. That's Leah Murphy, also with us, Nathaniel Popkin and Paul Levy. We're talking about the Reading Viaduct, the proposed Reading Viaduct, and it's one step closer to reality. We've actually posted some plans for the viaduct on our homepage. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes. Let me get to our callers. We also have an email from Giuliano. He says, I was under the impression that multiple nonprofits were spearheading the development of the viaduct. Has this changed? And Leah, if I can toss that back to you.
Sure. Like I mentioned, we merged with Reading Viaduct Project back in the fall, so now we're consolidated our efforts into one organization. There are other organizations who are also advocates or like to promote ideas about the project, but it's Friends of the Rail Park is really in partnership with Center City District and other partners in implementing Phase One and advocating for the three-mile vision.
You want to add to that? I mean, is this a public-private? Public-public?
I think this is public, community, private. I think it's a range of it. And it started with a community vision, as Nathaniel indicated. It's been advocated for a long time, sometimes by people in city government. I mean, there were people trying to do this in the Rendell and Street Administration. We're really at a wonderful point to have support from Mike DeBardinas and from Alan Greenberger in the Nutter Administration. So you have the city supporting this. The state is supporting this. We've got a lot of enthusiastic support, some state representatives and senators. And then I know as Leah has this experience as I, you start to talk to people. People just get so excited about this, and they want to know how they can contribute. So I think you've got community groups here. There's opportunities to donate to maintenance, to construction. This is going to be everybody's project.
Well, we're talking about the Reading Viaduct, and again, that's Paul Levy, chief executive of the Center City District. Also with us, Nathaniel Popkin. He's editorial and research director at Hidden City, also senior writer of the documentary film series called Philadelphia, The Great Experiment. And Leah Murphy, also with a senior associate with Interface Studio, and that's, again, a Philadelphia-based collaborative urban design and planning consulting firm, and she's also the president of Friends of the Rail Park. That's what we're talking about in this hour of Radio Times. Let me get to our callers at 1-888-477-9499. And we have Travis from West Philadelphia. Hi, Travis. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I used to live in the Callahill neighborhood. I lived there for 15 years and was actually part of the beginnings of the Reading Viaduct project with Sarah and John. And this is very exciting that it's reached this point.
It's great.
I'm currently the publisher of PhillyPedals.com, a bicycling website, and we're wondering if there's going to be a bicycling component here. You know, there's lots of bike lanes getting put in, and the Schuylkill River Trail is expanding. Will this be an opportunity that people will be able to get on the trail from one side and literally travel through the city to another destination?
Well, Travis, I'm going to toss that to Leah Murphy.
Yeah, that's a great question, Travis. And I think one of the opportunities of this project is that because it was four tracks wide, for the most part, aside from Phase One, it really, the width of that right-of-way is plenty wide to, afford space for, people who are on foot or on bike. I think for Phase One alone, it doesn't really make sense to bring your bike up a flight of stairs and ride it down the ramp for
a quarter of a mile or something.
Right. But, when you look at the full vision, especially when you include the city branch, then there's the opportunity to link in to Philadelphia's regional bike network in the Fairmount Park system. So that's definitely something that we're thinking about.
And we keep referring to the High Line, saying this is different from the High Line, but this is also wider than the High Line.
Well, I think that's the most exciting. I mean, anybody who's walked on the High Line always comes back with this remarkable experience of saying, we have to do that here. And clearly they've done something remarkable in New York City. But major portions, as Leah have said, particularly of the section that's elevated that goes north into Ludlow and Poplar, is two and three times as wide as the High Line. So there's a real opportunity here to have buildings connect to it, to have pedestrian and jogging walking trails, to have bike trails, and also to have recreation. But as Leah said, the first phase is sort of proof of concept. It's relatively short. It makes no sense in phase one, and that doesn't connect very much. But phase two clearly can go from Vine Street all the way on up into West Poplar. The City Branch section, you can go from Broad Street all the way out to the Art Museum and to the River Trail. So, yeah, there are huge opportunities to expand the bicycle infrastructure here.
And I think especially when you think about, you know, as a planner, you know, I'm continually asked to think about ways to integrate bikes on streets. And that's a totally different game than creating a dedicated pathway that allows you to go 3 miles across several neighborhoods without having to cross a single street. So in that way, you avoid all of the, you know, bike and car conflicts that happen on a regular basis, even in places where you do have things like bike lanes.
What's interesting too, Nathaniel, again, we were talking about this earlier, is the High Line in New York, I guess that initial section, and I've been on that section, and it's fantastic, $150 million. We're talking about, you know, a little bit less than $10 million in Philadelphia.
So the first phase that was completed in 2009 in New York, which took you from essentially the West Village up to, 20th Street, 21st Street, cost $150 million. So that's a significant amount of money, and we're not talking about anything near that in terms of scale of cost. And I think that's worth thinking about. This is a fairly low investment to jumpstart a project. Whether it ultimately works in that way remains to be seen, but it's a gambit that's probably worth taking.
Will there be a hotel straddling the Reading Viaduct in Philadelphia the way the High Line does in New York?
I think in so many community meetings, people would say, I love the High Line, but we want something authentically Philadelphia. We don't want the Mercedes-Benz they built there. And again, no criticism. What they did was remarkable. It inspired many of us. But I think the spirit of this design is picking up on some of the themes that Nathaniel said. There's great historic architecture there. Preserve that, enhance that, make this a lot more amenable to people, spend a whole lot less money, but create a space that people can make their own.
We have a tweet from Bob. The development and art galleries are already happening. The Reading Viaduct, will only encourage the transformation. Paul, do you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think if you've spent any time visiting the High Line in New York City over the last 3 to 4 years, every time you go up there, there's something more. People want to be near this amenity as it improves. I mean, as it is now, it's an interesting derelict, and it's not quite legal to be up there, although lots of people enjoy being up there. To have a good, accessible park that school children can go up to, that tourists can go to, that residents can go to, I think it will be transformational for this whole section of the city.
And I'm also thinking, Leah, about the kind of planting that might be there. I might be getting ahead of myself, but whether it will have that nice kind of natural feel to it as opposed to the more sort of organized planting that we might associate with certain parks.
Absolutely. I think that's, you know, we've done a lot of tours and we've talked with a lot of community members and supporters and fielded lots of emails. And one of the things we hear regularly is that people really value the wildness of the infrastructure, the plants that are there. And that's something that you'll see come through in the work that was done by Studio Brian Haynes and trying to maintain that kind of improvisational kind of, you know, wild and plantings.
You like that idea, Nathan?
Well, I think that in the beginning of the show, you referred to it being filled with weeds and graffiti, and some of that was true. But many of those weeds were wildflowers that have developed, as nature does, over decades. And it's an extraordinary thing. And not only is there wildlife, but there's also animals and birds that have nested, that are born there, and that live up there. And that's kind of an interesting aspect to the city that we forget about.
Well, we have to take another short break and get back to our conversation. We also have to say goodbye to you, Paul Levy. Thank you for stopping in and talking about the Reading Viaduct.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
You're welcome. He's founding chief executive of the Center City District, and Nathaniel Popkin and Leah Murphy staying with us for the rest of the hour. And so are you. So give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Much more to talk about after the short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Wan Institute supports WHYY. They are a graduate school offering acupuncture and herbal medicine in Glenside and in Hahnemann Hospital. They have both faculty and student clinics. Details at woninstitute.edu.
1812 Productions, Philadelphia's all-comedy theater company, supports WHYY. Now on stage, 1812's annual political comedy, This Is the Week That Is. Written and performed by Philadelphia's own Jennifer Childs and This Is the Week That Is ensemble, this annual political satire features a script that changes with the headlines and up-to-the-minute reporting on the day's most important news, from Russian invasions to dog curbing in South Philadelphia. Tickets at 1812productions.org.
The importance of eye contact in the matter of extinction.
If the future of the planet depends on everybody, you know, looking into the eyes of a Sumatran rhino, then I'm afraid we're in trouble. There are just too few of them left.
Being at the front lines of planetary mass extinction is an emotional place for New Yorker writer Elizabeth Colbert. Thoughts for Earth Day next time on The Takeaway from PRI Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
Get Healthy Philly, an initiative of the Philadelphia Health Department, supports WHYY. Cigarette butts are one of the most polluted items in the world. Help keep your parks, recreation centers, and playgrounds smoke-free and butt-free. Details at 1-800-QUIT-NOW or smokefreephilly.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. We are talking about Philadelphia's proposed Reading Viaduct, and it looks like it's one step closer to reality, inspired by New York's High Line, but distinct Philadelphia in concept and design. Construction for the first quarter mile stretch could begin as soon as maybe the end of this year or the beginning of next year. We're talking about the vision, the plans, the challenges, and the economic benefits of the Reading Viaduct project with Leah Murphy and with Nathaniel Popkin. And again, calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Also, for information about Leah's organization, you can go to their website, therailpark.org. Leah, what about issues of safety? You always have to think about those things.
Absolutely, and that's something that that's a question that we embrace because we think it's an important one to talk about. I think it really comes down to four things, you know, four ways of making the project feel safe and comfortable, especially, you know, when you're looking at the portion west of Broad, the city branch. It's lighting, proper lighting to make it feel safe at night. Access, creating a lot of good access points, strong connections to the street grid, both from, you know, from below and from above. Programming, having lots of activity on the park itself, and that's a role that Friends of the Rail Park anticipates taking on once, you know, future phases are complete. And having active uses adjacent to the project where, you know, a lot of people have oriented their buildings away from the project because it's been seen as a blighting factor. But I think that mentality will shift dramatically once the park is implemented and people will want to activate those parts of the building. People will want to have offices facing the park. They'll want to have retail spaces and galleries and things that will, you know, activate the park and make it feel more safe.
And will it be open 24/7? I mean, is the idea is that it would be like a street in a way?
I think there are some parts that could very easily be left open 24 hours. For phase one right now, where we are anticipating keeping that open all the time. But there are certainly parts of the park that we would want to have controlled access and close off at night, or, you know, when the sun goes down, the tunnel being one of those. And I think that's, you know, one of the locations along the 3 mile route that we get a lot of safety questions about.
Have you walked the viaduct?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, is there a favorite part for you, or a part that you find most intriguing or most confounding even?
Well, Paul touched on what's wonderful about it. That is, you're constantly surprised by what you see. You're constantly reminded of how big the city is, how vast and interesting it is. And you forget that when you're walking on the street. You forget that there are domes, that there are spires, that there are bridges, that there are tall buildings in the distance. And all of these things are meant to excite you and also connect you. You're connected to place by being able to see out like that. And I think that's really exciting. And we've touched a lot about who's going to use this. I do think that it's another way of extending the tourist experience here. In fact, it's really a 5-minute walk from the Reading Terminal to the access point to get onto this. And one can easily envision bringing a lunch that was purchased there and bringing it up to this phase one of the viaduct and being able to sit and eat outside. In fact, that would be the only place you could do so in walking distance.
Are there concerns you have about it?
Are there concerns I have about it?
Yes.
I wouldn't say there are concerns. I think that the elephant in the room is the rest of the viaduct itself, which is owned by the Reading Company. There are enormous question marks about the acquisition of that. The Reading Company has been difficult for the city and city officials to figure out. There were possibilities back during the Rendell administration that the city could have acquired it, but didn't for various reasons, and they're not all bad reasons. It just didn't happen. At that time, there was a lot of interest, perhaps, in tearing it down. So there's a huge question mark. You're just doing a very small piece here, and you have the long stretch going underground to the west, which I think is exciting and holds tremendous possibility. And that's owned by SEPTA, so that's easy. The rest of the viaduct, it's a big question mark. And so that's the biggest concern.
And what's interesting is the Reading Railroad is no longer in the railroad business. So I don't even know if they call themselves the Reading Railroad.
It's the Reading Company.
It's Reading International.
Reading International. And they've been very difficult to deal with. And I think that Alan Greenberger in the administration and Paul have been working to figure that out for a long time. I assume some politicians have as well. I'm not privy to exactly what's happened with that, but I haven't seen much progress. And I think that there's hope in demonstrating that, look, this is what we're going to do,
right,
and we're going to figure out how to do it, and that's what we're showing you in this case, and that will work. But it remains to be seen.
What do you think, Leah? And then we'll get back to our callers and our emailers.
Yeah, I mean, the ownership issues are a major obstacle to overcome. I think when it comes down to it, it's a question of political will. We have a lot of support from the city, for the portion east of Broad. And I think, it's just a matter of pushing for it when it comes down to it. And, west of Broad, it's a different story. As Nathaniel mentioned, it's owned by SEPTA. And the future of the city branch largely is, it's up to them what they decide to do with it. SEPTA acquired the city branch from Conrail in the 90s, initially as a part of a concept to reconnect Philadelphia to Reading with a commuter rail line, a concept that fell apart politically, and since then there hasn't really been a clear vision for a future use for the city branch. Last spring, Friends of the Rail Park released some conceptual designs for a portion of the city branch focusing on the connection with Broad Street. That was produced through a community design collaborative grant by a volunteer team spearheaded by Olin. Bolin Sawinski Jackson. And the intent of going through that process for us was to get some, really compelling imagery to illustrate the great potential of the city branch west of Broad, and also as a process to bring city decision makers all into the same room and talk about the future of the city branch. So around the same time, the city released its central district plan, which identified a bus rapid transit line for the future use of the city branch. So I think now SEPTA's kind of in this place where they're taking stock of their goals and trying to decide what they want to do with the city branch through a bus rapid transit feasibility study being done by Delaware Valley Regional Planning Commission that should be complete in the fall.
But is it possible to share that underground area with SEPTA?
Yeah, I think it's wide enough to accommodate both uses. It certainly wouldn't be our preference to have buses competing. I mean, that's really what you face on street level, pedestrians and joggers and bicyclists competing for space with cars, buses and trucks. It is wide enough to accommodate that, but right. It's not our...
Vision.
Right.
We have an email from Susan. Are there plans for accessibility?
Well, that's one of the great things about many rails-to-trails projects is that, you know, when you have a train going on a track, you can't go up too steep a slope. So because of that, the grade changes along the three-mile route itself are accessible. So, for instance, to get up onto phase one, it is a ramp, and it's a gentle grade, so it's accessible.
And here's a softball comment from Andrea. How can residents get involved in the development or support of the Reading Viaduct? Go ahead, Leah.
I'm so glad you asked that, Andrea. We get this question a lot, and it's, you know, we're an all-volunteer organization, and we rely so much on supporters and volunteers to help promote the project and help us, you know, run events and things like that. So I would say, you know, go to our website, therailpark.org, sign up for our mailing list. We do a lot of updates via Facebook, so you can like us on Facebook. We have a great short video on our homepage that was done by our friends at Good Motion Project with some just stunning, compelling imagery. Much of it shot from a mini helicopter, so you really get to see.
Really?
Yes, it's really, you have to check it out. So if you're new to the project, you're just learning about it, that's a great video that you can watch and also send to your friends to get, you know, to help spread the word.
And as you had said earlier, Nathaniel, this really is an example of where community people and organizers and activists wanted to do something and have stuck to it, and here we are talking about it.
They stuck to it, and the key thing is that it created the political will, which Leah mentioned before, and what's going to be necessary to acquire that last piece, the big piece from the Reading International. This is going to, hopefully, I would imagine, prove that, that the community vision was worth it and is worth, therefore, putting political will behind it. And that's the exciting thing. This is people dreaming about what their city could be like.
Let me get, looks like Paul from Newtown Square to join our conversation. Hi, Paul. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yeah, good morning,
Marty. Good morning.
Guests, it's, I always enjoy your show.
Thank you.
I live out in Edgemont, and as you know, in the 1950s and 60s, there was some kind of effort to push car travel over train travel. And there used to be a trolley line, for example, that ran all the way from Westchester to get to 69th Street, and I wish to goodness that was there today. So I'm all for rails to trails, and we use the Norristown one on bikes, and if they can be turned into transportation arteries for bicyclists, that's wonderful. But I always think, have people looked at the feasibility of rail coming back to lines, and is it absolutely out of the question that rail could ever come back to this line, or it could be used for public transportation?
Well, and bringing it back to this former Reading Railroad roadbed or railbed, let me toss that to you, Nathaniel Popkin.
So lots of people advocate for turning the city branch back to rail. Now, it was used mostly in the last decades of its use for freight traffic. It wasn't used as a passenger railroad, and that's what its origins were as well, for freight. But a lot of people advocate for turning the city branch, which starts essentially at Broad Street and goes west out toward Fairmount Park.
Underneath,
underground, a cut that you can see, you know, when you're at the Rodin Museum, you see it, back to rail. The question is, where is the political will? And within this shrunken funding and budgetary climate that we live in, is that realistic? Is it a long-term dream? Is it a short-term dream? There's good arguments to be made from using it for transit. Leah and the Friends of the Rail Park say that it will be used for transit, that is, largely for bicycles, and that's a key thing. We actually lack bicycle infrastructure in Philadelphia. Mm. We are way behind on bicycle infrastructure in Philadelphia. So this would ultimately add to that. And I think it's just a question of the combination of political will, vision, and budgetary reality. It's impossible to imagine right now that SEPTA would invest in that new line as a rail line, unless a miracle in national priorities happened.
Well, and we're talking about, you know, eventually a 3-mile rail line. It would be a huge investment of money, it seems, to return that to some kind of a rail line.
It would. Well, and that part isn't three, but it's about a mile and a half. And the question is, are there better and cheaper and actually more effective alternatives for transportation? And It well may be that there are. One of them is to put a light rail onto the parkway, which is a vision that has been done in other cities. I was in Barcelona not that long ago, and they have a street that's very similar in scale to the parkway, and there's a light rail line that runs up the middle of it, and it works wonderfully. And so at grade, when people can see where, it's strange, it's reversed, where the rail infrastructure is, they're more likely to use it.
That's so interesting. Go ahead, Leah.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, a lot of people don't realize that the parkway was actually designed to accommodate that kind of transportation at street level, and I think, you know, it is a lot of a lot more value when you can see it, especially when you're talking about tourists who are going up and down the parkway. It's easier for them to get on and off, and find their way. And I think, you know, in a city context where you have limited resources and limited opportunities, you have to do the most with what you have. And for that reason, I think that's, you know, you need to preserve the experience of the city branch and really take advantage of that opportunity, and also take advantage of the opportunity at street level for transit. That's just, to me, that makes the most sense.
I probably should have asked you at the very beginning of the show, but what has been your interest in this? Why have you gotten so involved in this project?
Well, Interface Studio, where I work, is just half a block away from Phase 1, actually. So
you look at it?
Right out the window every day. So it's kind of sparked my imagination, you know, and then I became aware of efforts, advocacy efforts, and became involved in that way. It's a really gratifying experience having so many people so excited about it. So that's a big reason why I like to be involved. But I think it's just such a great vision, and that's, it's as simple as that.
Do you think you'll miss the old viaduct once the new one is up and running, so to speak?
That's a hard question. Well, I think that, you know, part of its charm is its grit, you know, and we're hoping to preserve some of that quality and through the designs and future phases of the project. So I don't think I'll miss it. I think it'll be much better as a public park accessible to everyone.
Well, Leah Murphy, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times. And if you want to find out more about the Reading Viaduct, you can go to their website, therailpark.org. Nathaniel Popkin, thank you very much as well.
Thank you, Morgan.
And you can go to our webpage and you can see some images, some pictures of what the Reading Viaduct could look like. And you go to whyy.org/Radio Times. I'm Marty Moscowen. Thank you so much for joining us in the first hour of Radio Times. And do stay with us for hour two. We'll be right back.